Digital 410 Productions and the What's the Scuttlebutt podcast are proud to invite you to the special online event.
A new Library of America volume presents three powerful firsthand accounts of World War II by veterans of the Pacific War who lived to tell their stories. E.B. Sledge, Samuel Hines, and Alvin Kernan. Volume editor Elizabeth D. Samet, professor of English at West Point, joins historian Richard B. Frank to discuss what makes these memoirs classics of the modern literature of war. This free online event will be Wednesday, March 16th, 2022 at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. World War II Memoirs, The Pacific Theater, a conversation with Elizabeth D. Samet and Richard B. Frank.
To find more information on this event and to register, go to loa.org or WTSPWorldWar2.com.
Digital 410 Productions proudly presents the What's the Scuttlebutt podcast with your hosts, Dodd Abernathy, Jeff Copsetta, and Henry Sledge.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode. Nay, forget that. A special episode of the What's the Scuttlebutt podcast, your favorite World War II-based podcast. And it's another Monday night, but it's a special Monday night, and we are all excited to be here. Joining us, as always, Jeff Copsetta and one Henry Sledge. Gentlemen, how you all doing tonight?
Doing good. Doing well.
Can you hear me, Henry?
Yeah.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yep, you're doing well. I guess to kick it off, let's just go ahead and intro our special guest. And I can't think of no better way of doing it than playing a little sounder, if you will.
Sir, coming across the airfield today. I've never been more scared in my entire life.
And we're all afraid. All of us. The man who isn't scared out here is either a liar or dead.
History is full of wars fought for 100 reasons. But this war, our war, I want to believe. I have to believe that every step across that airfield, every man that's wounded, every man I lose, that it's all worthwhile because our cause is just. Of course, if a just cause came with some hot food and cold water, then it'll be okay too. Rest up, boys. Thought you might need that.
Thank you, sir.
That guy got me.
Henry, would you like to do the honors, sir?
Yeah. Folks, really happy to have with us tonight my good friend, the actor portraying Captain Haldane in the Pacific miniseries. You just heard him in that iconic scene. So, Scott, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, gentlemen, for inviting me.
I got to just say real quick, I'm so excited you're here. I get an opportunity to do something I never do on this show, which is to go to my DVD collection, and pull out a DVD, and here it is. Lucky number 11. Fantastic.
11.
Lucky number 11. This is a fantastic movie. And when I heard you're coming on, I was like, Pacific, Pasha, let's pull out quality films.
When was that, Scott? When was Lucky?
06?
I think we filmed it in 05, 2005 or
the right before like the Pacific that. Then?
A couple of years, yeah. It was.
Okay.
I remember getting recognized for it when we were filming in Australia, in Port Douglas. And some guy serving me a beer at a bar, you know, I'm on the patio. It's like, mate, I recognize you. And you in the show? Yeah. He's listing. He's like, where did I know you from? And listed a bunch of projects. And then he's like, no, the movie I know you from was called The Wrong Man. What? I wasn't in a movie called The Wrong Man. And then he explained to me what it was. And I'm like, you mean Lucky Number 11? So for some reason in Australia, that movie is called The Wrong Man.
I think they do that from time to time. You'll hear like Japanese releases or like German releases will just have, I guess maybe they feel like a name change will better suit that market. And so you hear that from time to times where movies will have a little bit different name. But I
Burger King's not Burger King in Australia either.
What is it? Whopper House?
The wrong burger.
Wrong burger.
The wrong burger. No, they don't like anything, any business that's got, you know, anything related to the king or queen in it. So they it's called something else.
That makes perfect sense. Yep.
Yeah.
Don't want to stand by the queen or the king. So
that intro just brought me back to that night we filmed it there.
Now,
I was talking to Joe.
What we'll get into how you got into the Pacific and all that, but since we're on the topic, what is your method for getting into a role or a scene such as that? Like I said, I did a little bit of background work on the streaming series, The Right Stuff, and just watching the main actors. You know, some of them just sit in a corner, wait for them to say action. Some of them are pacing the floor, doing their lines over the head. Everybody kind of has their own method to getting into that scene, getting into that character, and that's a pretty pretty rough scene and a straightforward scene. How did you go about prepping for that particular scene? Do you remember?
Well, I mean, we'd been at it for so long at that point. That was the last one that we filmed, actually.
Really?
First did. Yeah, for me, it was 5 and then 5, 7 and then 6. So by that point, you were just so entrenched. And I believe as we shot it, it was pretty much in sequence. So we'd already crossed the airfield, done all that. And just the setup, the sets themselves put you just right into it. I mean, they spared nothing in how they created those sets. So I was also very tired. And I couldn't imagine how tired the skipper would have been at that point. So all that just played right into how I did it. And it was very easy at that point to sink into character and do those scenes.
Yeah. It's amazing to think, you know, how tired they were, how hot it was, dehydrated, how heavy everything is back then, all the gear, and just being in that environment for so long and fear for your life and all the things they're witnessing and just, you know, it's just mind boggling when you try to even put yourself there.
Yeah. And I mean, so many takes to do it. And it takes about a day just to do that one scene. And if things mess up, and there was actually, when we were filming that, there was kangaroos jumping in the background. like these kangaroos were jumping over, you know, just like big, you know, great big shell holes in the ground, and you're like, yeah, cut. Yeah, we got another kangaroo jumping through there. But that, yeah, I mean, the airfield, everything, to, I think it was pretty accurate in terms of the size of the airfield, the building, the specs on it were just bang on. And So there wasn't anything in your vision. I mean, on the ground, there's shells and there's rocks and stuff that people would never see, kind of thing. And that was that where we shot in far north. That was down near Melbourne in the Yuyangs. So it was a rock quarry. So the Iwo set was there. Peleliu was there. Okinawa was there. And the second half of episode 5, as we were approaching the airfield, it just a massive, massive set. Like you had to, from base camp, it took you 10 minutes just to drive to where you had to shoot.
I think out of, you know, a lot of the jobs on a movie set, I think these set production people are one of the most overlooked when it comes to the general public. As you were just saying, you know, shell casings on the ground and just the amount of effort that goes into creating that set, even though there's so much stuff that the movie goer or the TV goer will never see, but they just put that much effort into it. They don't get half the credit they deserve, I think.
No, absolutely not. A fantastic crew there in Australia. The makeup department, Kira Tripathi, the head makeup, she won an Emmy or Golden Globe, actually, I think, for the makeup. The amount of detail that went into just that and everything related to the uniform, the webbing, any type of equipment you had to touch, the all the hills there were fake.
Yeah.
So they brought in train cars, and then they built like with wood, a wooden frame over top, and then this like special kind of paper mache stuff over top, overlaid that, and planted trees and, you know, bodies. And you're just like, really?
Wow.
But each one, I think, was, you know, about 25 million.
Wow.
Each episode.
Now, when it came to shooting the scenes, did the director kind of, at that point, did they, I mean, I guess any of the scenes for that matter, do they pretty much have an idea of what they want the scene to look like? Or is it one of the situations where they're shooting at the same scene over and over from every angle, just so they have plenty of B-roll to choose from when they're doing the final edit? Do you remember shooting the same scene from multiple angles, or do they just have an idea what angle they want? You just go through it.
You know, a little bit of both. They're certainly very well planned out, and because it was on 35 millimeter, everything was shot 35. So, the setups, took a long time. We were on a French hour schedule. So it was for the actors, it was a 10 hour straight shoot. So you didn't take an hour off for lunch. Just about halfway through, you sit down for 20 minutes, eat, and you're back at it. I can't say there was a ton of coverage in terms of, you know, we're going this and then we're going this and then we're going this. You know, I think, as you see when you watch it, trying to keep it pretty open, take in everything, take in the other men. And, you know, of course, there's a lot of close up stuff, but, you know, each guy obviously had a vision about it and worked a little bit differently. And I think probably for me, the best experience I had was F6 with Tony Toe directing.
I think
go ahead, was Harry. It Carl Franklin who directed episode 5?
Carl did 5.